Welcome back to The Craft, a pitching podcast here on the Pitchless Podcast Network. I am your host, Nick Pollock. And well, look, we both put out our starting pitching rankings. And I said, I know I never bring you onto this show, but I just have to do it this time. And it's our lovely friend, Eno Saris. Thanks for being such a great guest and coming on the show, Eno.
Are you home again?
I am in the what will be the new office.
The closet?
Yeah, right. This was my bedroom, actually, because I would be like, I would work in the office all day. That's a bigger room. But now I'm going to make this the office because the fiance and I are going to be, I mean, I can't put her in here. This is just wrong. But no, it's a mess in this apartment. But how are you doing? You just had a 9-mile run.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super exciting. It's so great.
Oh my gosh. That's insane. We're not doing any of that stuff, though, right now. We're talking about our ranks. And I just want to say right now, thank you, Alex Fast, for the second that we put out both of our rankings. He then put out a whole list of our differences and said, I demand a podcast. I'm like, Alex, we already talked about doing this. This is what we do. And so I have a Google sheet here that is your rankings against mine. Before I even talk about certain ones that might be different, there are two mindsets here. One is, you know, is focusing a little bit more on 15 teamers and deeper leagues. And mine absolutely embraces the fact that there's a shallower, there's a more plentiful waiver wire in your 12 teamers, which means that the strategy changes around like 65, 75 in my SP rankings. And there are going to be those deeper plays that are going to be more preferable for Eno. That is not for me for those reasons. So those giant gaps can be explained a lot by that.
One other one is, so you make that philosophical change, that decision during the season not to really rank anybody's hurt.
Yeah.
And my similar decision is to not rank prospects that I don't think will make opening day rotations.
Yeah.
So I have very few prospects in, and I do a top 150. I have very few prospects in it. I have Jackson Jobe.
Bubba Chandler, maybe?
I don't even think Bubba made it. I don't think he's making the opening day rotation. They signed Haney, you know.
I know.
I only have guys that could make it, like Povich, if he's still a prospect. If he's not a six starter, that's basically it. I try to rank six starters and up. That's it.
Yeah, and that's kind of where my head is at of, hey, they could, and if they do, that's amazing, but you can get rid of them quickly. And I actually like to put them higher because you know, even before the season starts. And the worst thing that you can do, in my view, in a 12 teamer is draft pitchers who hurt you or are just like not that good and like barely helpful. And that actually holds you back from getting something that could be better.
So Randy Vasquez, I have 125. Yeah.
You're
in a 12 team. He's not on your, don't be on your radar.
Yeah, right.
Don't be on the radar until he like throws two good games at least, right, where you're like, oh, wow, okay, something's different, you know? Like,
absolutely.
And he's not even a hot name that will be on other people's radar that they'll scoop him before, like, you know?
Right.
So I have him at 125. You have him at 337. You know, I think that's almost the same kind of place in our rankings, which is just like, hey, he's a guy that could be in a rotation. Yeah, there's like a 5% chance he puts it all together. I might like him a little better just because there are the pieces there for a good pitcher. I think, you know, there are a lot of pieces. They're kind of all kind of mediocre, but there are, you know, he throws a lot of different pitches and like they're all kind of like 98 to 101 stuff plus. It's like, you know, it could work out. The next one that we have the biggest difference is Paul Blackburn and Matt Waldron. Whatever, you know, if you told me like you love Matt Waldron more than Nick Pollock, I'd be like, I do. I had him 140. I had Matt Waldron 147 out of 150. Like, you're telling me I love this guy? Like, I shoved him on the back end just being like, knuckleballer, YOLO, whatever.
Yeah, oh, gosh. That was the first shirt we put out, was don't trust a knuckleballer. Way back in 2015. But no, I mean, here we said we weren't going to talk about any of these guys, and here we are doing it. I'm just kidding.
We're swim moving past.
No. It's I actually labeled it like he has a rotation spot, is literally a tier.
Yeah, that's the Randy Vasquez,
you know. And it might be Randy Vasquez. It's not confirmed yet. It could be Kyle Hart there, and that's they signed him and all, who knows.
Because they signed two guys.
They signed him and Pivetta.
Pivetta, so he might not even have, and this came out before the Pivetta signing,
right? So and, oh yeah, there's already been things that I'm like, oh man,
he was in the has a rotation spot tier, right, and slightly above the has a rotation spot and is terrible tier, which is the Matt Waldron 147. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope for his sake that it works. It's unfortunate.
I think Hart and Pivetta signed after my rankings. So yeah, I had Vasquez and Waldron in for that reason. They'll probably fall out on when I re-update.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, right. There's no way he's a 147 now. I mean, he might not have a rotation spot at all.
Yeah.
But on that topic quickly, Quinn Matthews, I know the Cardinals don't have spot for him, but all right. I'm like so in on Quinn Matthews now, and he looks so good yesterday. I just want to let everyone know there's a month before the season starts, and if there is one opening, somehow Matz gets hurt or whatever. Sonny Gray was delayed last year, for example.
I'm afraid with Quinn Matthews, and I've watched him a lot because I was here at Stanford, and I watched him live, and literally like the Mark Appel thing where it's like, it's polished. Like he has good advisors, so he knows how to talk to the media. Like, but he also has like five pitches and it's sort of polished, and he's like went to a college and like, it's all like ready to go. It's like a ready to go package. I just don't know. It's going to be that great. Like the fastballs, neither fastball is above 100 stuff plus. And like,
really? I'm actually surprised. I mean, I don't know the, I'll put it this way.
It's a large arsenal, so it might work. It's like five pitches, so it might work despite having okay.
Yeah, I totally get that. What I'm basing this off of is literally just yesterday.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. He might look great in spring, especially if he's going in like two innings. He can throw a little bit harder, but he's like, because he's a five-pitch polished guy, he's going to look like next to like a Mizorowski, you know, he's going to be like, oh my God, this guy has like 8 million times more command than Mizorowski.
Oh my gosh. Mizorowski, you look so good, Mizorowski.
That's 99, but like, where's it's like it also,
it's not just it's 99. It's like super with flat movement. Release at 7.2 extension. Like
with lots of horizontal movement too. Like it was coming. The sinker was like boring in on the righties. That sinker, that 99 mile an hour sinker was crazy.
So just as a reference point for Quinn Matthews, I watched him yesterday, and the one thing I really liked was he has good command. Like I watched him and felt like, oh yeah, this is someone who, as you're everything you were describing that was leading up to a negative, I was like, this is all good stuff. Why do you like this? Like, oh, I see.
But I think that can look like in a one, especially in a one look situation.
Right.
I think command can like almost poison the well a little bit where you're like, oh, this guy's doing what he wants to do.
Well, right. Exactly.
And then later he can do what he wants to do against major leaguers. And they're like, that wasn't that scary.
Very fair. And I, you know, I was like, okay, actually I'm very aware of that. Like for example, my, Uyola, I love, like I watched one game where he looked great, but then I saw the numbers of being like, his walk rate's terrible, Nick. Yeah, but that's not the case for Quinn Matthews. It's always been sub 10% walk rate, say bad games or something like that.
He is polished. And he is polished. Right. I just don't know what the ceiling is. That's what I want
to
say.
So let me tell you, actually. So watching this yesterday, I went straight to the live app that we have. It's Savant Data, but it just puts it all in such a lovely little package. You can just look up any pitcher quickly. It's a PL Pro app that we have for spring training stats. It's live. And Quinn Matthews threw 94 yesterday from the left side, which is fine. Slightly above average extension, 6.7. Okay. Vert was 18 to 19 inches. And his attack angle was 1.3, which is somewhat flat, which is like better to be upstairs with. That package, I've been trying to bother Kyle Bland about this. I want like live stuff plus and live PLV marks, and we're working on that this year. But I would think that would actually turn into an above average stuff plus fastball.
If he has that looking vert. At Triple A because I don't have
I think this is different than what we had for him at Triple A, so it could easily be spring training being like, yo, what's up, I'm spring training, here's my dope.
That even those numbers are different.
Sorry,
even those numbers are different than what you had.
I believe so, because I wasn't nearly as hyped as I was.
Quinn Matthews, 97.5 changeup, 94.7 curveball, 90 four-seam fastball, 89 sinker. So not even, I haven't said one above 100 stuff plus yet.
Yeah. Oh gosh. That's not good.
That's what I'm working off of. But I do want spring training. One of the problems with spring training stuff plus is, and a lot of these numbers are like not necessarily coming through in the same way because they through Savant in the same way. And they don't, it's not all of them. It's like 20% of the numbers.
I also do want to mention, I think the, Okay, so in the IVB was 2 inches lower in AAA for Quinn Matthews.
So then, and another thing that's annoying as heck is just, is it a calibration issue?
Yeah, right. Is this spring training?
Did you see the thing that who put it out? Was it Michael Rosen put out that Cactus League, everybody gets on average half an inch less ride than Grapefruit League? And Verlander knew this. Verlander like said this somewhere. He's like, oh, I'm in the Cactus League, so I'm not worried about my like vert because I know I've lost a half inch just being here.
What?
And Rosen was like, what? And he looked it up and it was a half inch difference.
That's so funny. I mean, that doesn't have to do, that's just because of the calibration universally, not anything to do with the environment, I assume. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, because I know
the
about
Rays
like,
the Rays are in the Grapefruit League. They're not in the Cactus League. I guess, you know, they could change
things. It's also weird. Okay, guys. So we've really gone back and forth of our rankings so far. It's been,
it's been really, really like informative.
So, one thing that Eno and I did were part of this morning was with Lance Brzozowski and Eric Samulski. Eno and I also wrote our own individual articles where we reviewed pitchers featuring new pitches this spring. And definitely check out their articles. It's just a really fun collaboration that we did. We each took 3 pitchers out of 12, and then we shared them across. It was great. My article is absolutely the shallowest of all of these. So go read theirs. It did actually spur a really interesting conversation because I selected Grayson Rodriguez, who's introducing a sweeper this spring, and I'm not so optimistic about it. And to sum it all up really quickly, I don't think that Grayson Rodriguez really needs that much more help against right-handers with the sweeper, as it wouldn't be really any help against lefties, the opposite handedness of it. And the slider kind of is effective. It's a very good put-away pitch offering against righties, 22% swing strike rate as well, high strike rates. He had some mistakes with it last year, but I'm personally not seeing that the sweeper is a game changer for him, while I still feel as if he needs a different and harder strike pitch, like a sinker inside the righties. I suggest a cutter too, because I feel like his extension's there. Long story short, I have Grayson Rodriguez around 30 or so, and Eno has him at 16. So here we are, battling it out. I'm going to say that the person with a higher amount should, or the higher ranking should defend it first.
So, okay.
You got to share your love, your passion. So what do you got?
So, platoon splits on hitters are really noisy, and you need 1,000 plate appearances to believe them. Probably because they're facing lots of different pitchers, and so, they're not the same. Platoon splits on pitchers are actually really sticky, and it's because pitches have platoon splits, and arm slots have platoon splits, and those are things that are harder necessarily. I mean, those are the same, the pitchers throwing them over and over again, so it's like, you can know something quickly. So Grayson Rodriguez last year gave up a .467 slugging to righties and a .341 to lefties. He's a pronator. He stays behind the fastball, has a great changeup. These types of players often don't have great breaking balls. Now, you look at his player page and you say, what are you talking about? You know, he's got a 108 stuff plus on the slider. That sounds like a good stuff plus. It is below average for sliders, but it is still above average for all pitches. So what's the problem, Well, we did this thing where we started splitting platoon splits. So I have stuff plus platoon splits versus righties and lefties. So the slider, and I think it's because it's a harder gyro. The slider to opposite hands has a 130 stuff plus. The slider to same hands has a 105 stuff plus, which is even worse.
Yeah.
Now we can go to the results on the pitches. And this is where I agree with you. I started quoting some results on the pitches, started slugging percentage on the slider. I know that's where I don't love it. There's a lot of noise. How many balls in play? Who's the defender? What did he set it up with? Did he have to throw it in the zone? Is the slider the only pitch he can throw in the zone other than the fastball? So, all these sort of things start mucking that up. But I will say that righties have done fairly well against the slider, like a near .400 slugging against the slider. That's a little bit rare. Usually right on right sliders have really small slugging percentages.
Yeah.
So my point is, you give a pronator a changeup, But I also hear what you're saying. Like, we're reasonable people and we agree so often. It could be a sinker that might be better because it's in the same velocity band. And he does have a problem where he gets keyholed. He brought out a cutter when he first came up, but against lefties, anytime he needed a strike, he threw the cutter and it got smacked. It's an 850 slugging against lefties or something. I don't even want to.
Yeah,
something.
No, he allowed 4 home runs. I think it was 3 home runs against.
Yeah,
the
cutter, like it was bad. Thrown. But yeah. Maybe because he threw it too often, or because he got keyholed. Maybe he needs to throw the four seam and the cutter and play them off each other. And so I agree that his four seam should be really good. It's not as good as it should be, probably because when he gets stuck, he goes to it.
Yeah, I absolutely hear you on the sweeper just being a better stuff pitch, and it probably will be more effective than the slider against right-handers just overall. It's really going back to like a whole philosophy I have that I've learned from last year, and really at the end of last year, and then it got even more amplified from Garrett Crochet, which is if you focus on high extension pitchers, I mean, look at Logan Gilbert right now, where they have two hard pitches that they can throw strikes with, you generally get success with that, right? It's just when it gets down to like 95 versus 85, that's the extension doesn't actually have as much of an effect as opposed to a pitch that's like at 95 versus 91. And we see that with Gary Crochet throwing four seamers and the cutters right underneath that. We saw it with Kodai Senga having an amazing.
I think the Rays like this, they generally like extension. They usually have really good extension. They love the hard breaking ball.
They'll bring back a gyro
off an extension guy. Yeah.
And the sinker really helps too. This is why, I was talking to Pablo Lopez about this, being like, man, like you have this sinker that is really effective against right-handers. You have over 7 feet of extension. That might be something to look into of just embracing that more and really like splitting that fully. Right. And we see that from a lot of guys too. So with Grayson, you have just like the 95 and then there's nothing else above 90. And he's actually like 96, 97 in the fastball and has over 7 feet of extension and has nothing to take advantage of it. And that's all I really want him to do is I feel like this is seeing the results that are in some ways average, in some ways worse than average. Like our ex-WOBA against, I think righties last year was like 365 and it was like over 400 was the actual result of it. And it's like, you have an elite fastball. How is this happening? Mm-hmm. And my answer to that is, right, you don't have something else at the same velocity that they think it's a fastball. There's nothing else that's saying it's not a fastball once they think it's a fastball, right?
Like an 89-90 mile an hour slider, maybe.
Right. And I was mentioning before the show about like how you taught me something very important with Brandon Woodruff about you don't need to have like the best breaking ball. You don't need to be a supinator to have a pronator pitch that works and vice versa. Because if you just have a decent cutter, doesn't need to be the greatest one, and you don't throw stupid mistakes with it, like, okay, cool. You have the strike rate now because it's just different than the four seamer, right? You have this pitch you can throw in the zone. And that's like, oh, okay, now I can't just sell out.
That's why the sinker's on the rise again. Is that people are like, I can throw my four seam and my sinker in the zone to righties, and now I can play them just off each other. And
just too many guys just throw sinkers like down the middle. I'm like, it's a sinker. I'm like, no. You got to do it inside. You can't do that. It doesn't matter. You don't need like 18 inches of ride either. You can get like 13, 14. Doesn't matter. Just make it not your four seamer movement and you'll be fine. I hope to see it with Grayson. Like I think we're on the same page about the upside of Grayson. Like this is a dude that we're like, you should be so good. Like you should. Oh my. Even without good location changeups, you should be so good. And it just hasn't clicked yet. So that's why I have him lower on it, because I feel that there are other guys that are just safer. And with so many guys, I just feel like, yeah, I get this and I know I'm going to get something really good out of this. While I'm willing to take that than shooting for like the top five, top 10 SP upside of Grayson. That's why I have this different ranking. All right. Eno, who do you want to attack me on here? Because I have, I listed a lot of guys at the bottom. Or guys that I'm higher on than you are, listed like 10 of them. I don't know. Which one you're like, Nick, this is just wrong. This can't be it.
Oh, because I am who I am, I think I'm wrong. But Michael King, I see a pitcher with one elite pitch, the sweeper. And who's just frantically trying to do enough with everything around it. And I remember the struggles early last year, and a lot of those struggles early last year were due to lefties. Our stuff plus doesn't have the changeup as a good as a great of a pitch intrinsically. It's just located amazingly. And so I think I like Michael King. He's in my top 30, but I don't think I'm putting him in my top 10.
Yeah, so you have I get that 10? Completely. I think with Michael King, it comes down to a few things here. One, I have a very big philosophy of, all right, I want to get high quality volume and I'm going to target that as much as I can, which I know, crazy idea, right? What? Nuts. Michael King and how and what his approach is, to me, really speaks in the same way of the classic like Zach Wheeler Alcantara kind of mold of excellent command for when a situation that you can actually be like a seven inning starter. And when you normally see that of like a seven inning kind of starter type, it usually comes with like a 23% strikeout rate. Like that's what we're hoping for out of Logan Webb this year, right? Something along those lines. But the thing is, Michael King actually has those weapons to showcase that 27% strikeout rate that they had last year. Actually, after May 4th last year, Michael King, who had struggles in the beginning, I think actually the sweeper was also letting him down a ton earlier on. He returned a 2.42 ERA, 1.12 WHIP, 29% K rate, 7% walk rate, and 138 innings in 24 starts. And he's one of the rare pitchers in this league that can throw front hip sinkers.
Like I love that
pitch. He just does that. He just goes, "Nah, okay, I'm just going to start you off. You're a lefty. I know I'm supposed to not throw sinkers again. I can throw front hip sinkers. Don't worry, I got this." And he can do that. And I actually,
who he reminds me of a little bit is Kluber then.
Oh yeah,
I really good that. Breaking ball, front door sinkers. Mm.
Yeah, that's actually a great call. And I think the changeup is excellent. I really do think this is a fantastic pitch. I wish my player pages weren't down at the moment, but I do recall heavily how much I love this changeup.
If you look at the
22% swing strike rate, 36% usage against lefties last year, at 68% strikes too. And that's,
if you look at the heat map of it, it's beautiful. It's just right on the bottom corner.
He's a command pitcher who can also go 25% plus strikeouts on a winning ball club. That's to me is like, that's what you're looking for in your drafts. And when you get to the teens, like we both have Max Fried inside our top 16, right? We're in agreement that like you want that volume guy with a winning possibility with good ratios and everything. But King has more strikeout potential. I think there's a little less injury ding, but maybe not because of last year's the big workload.
A little unspoken question here because even with Max Fried, I have 163, like a sort of a step back just to reflect. He has sort of a C-ish or a B-ish health grade from Jeff Zimmerman. But I put 157. I put fewer innings for Michael King than I had for Max Fried.
Oh, that's interesting.
Even though Jeff Zimmerman has like a B+, A- health grade for Michael King. The problem is that the minor league injuries are not in
The health grade.
Jeff Zimmerman's database.
Sure. They're
not in there. And this guy, like Michael King threw a pitch that like broke his elbow. He was like screaming on the mound.
What?
Yeah. Like it's like, I don't know. People
like
know
fractured
about this.
Or like.
Yeah. Michael King.
I don't want to watch gruesome, this. Don't
gruesome injury.
No. I remember my friends when I was like 14 years old. Oh, hey, look at this. I'm like, no, I don't want to watch this video, Ben.
Olecranon crown fracture.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't even know.
So
apparently we're
on the same page.
Painful.
The reason that you're lower on Michael King, I have him at 9. You have him much higher than that. You have him at 20. Much lower than that, 28. Is it all just due to injury?
I don't think that's the Olecranon one. I don't think it's this one. He had another one with the Marlins.
Is it due to the injury risk, you know?
No, it's due to the lack of stuff plus.
Okay.
It's a, name me another pitcher that whose best pitch is an elite sweeper that, like, I guess what's weird is I'm high on Clark Schmidt, but I don't have Clark Schmidt higher than Mahokane. So
yeah, it's interesting. So I guess we value the changeup.
We'll see Clay Holmes. We'll see what Clay Holmes does.
I value the changeup super, super highly for Michael King.
Okay. That's where the difference is.
Yeah, that's it. All right. There you go. There it is, guys. Explain the ranking difference. Shazam. Also, more than 100 innings. I have like 180. I think he's going to be just an amazing workhorse this year. I'm going to push it back to you here.
Which side am I supposed to pick again?
I'm going to
you're picking
say to you. Yeah. Someone that you're much higher on than I am for the season ahead. And okay, you have a couple highlighted, but those are like really deep guys. But okay, fine. Mitch Keller at 73. I have Mitch Keller at 135. And we're going to have Eno explain this when we're going to talk about Mitch Keller after this break. So Eno, I'm not a big fan of Mitch Keller. Mm-hmm. I even comped Hunter Brown to Mitch Keller the other day and everyone clutched their pearls. And I want to hear, though, what makes you put him at 75?
One stupid reason and one hopefully smart reason. And actually, hilariously, he's an answer to your question, which is his best pitch is an elite sweeper. The stupid reason is a career, last year, 308, 546, a career 401 ERA at home, 520 on the road. That's the stupid reason. He's eminently usable in half of starts. Last year, if you used him only at home, you got 80 to 90 innings of a 301 ERA. So that's the stupid reason. The hopefully smarter reason for me is that weirdly, he's turned into a super wide arsenal guy with a lot of average pitches, one dominant pitch in the sweeper. And I think even just the slightest change in command back to closer to league average where he has been in the past could do a lot for him. So location plus last year was 97. The year before was 99. The year before was, that was 100. The year that it was 100, he had a 3.91 ERA. You know, he's had a 25.5% strikeout rate. So I just think it's like the maturation. It's like a 28-year-old with a large arsenal that kind of is starting to know what he's doing with each of his pitches.
Sure.
And I know that he can go in and out, but if you just pitch him at home at the beginning and then wait to see, is it a good year for his command? Then you can pitch him away. If not, you have a half a pitcher.
So about that sweeper with Keller, our PLV loves it. We love sweepers. It's what's interesting about it to me is that Mitch Keller throws it 20% of the time against righties. That's pretty much the only way that he uses it. And half of the time that he throws it at righties are in two strike counts. And it's a average to below average put away rate on it. So in my view, when your best pitch is not above average at the thing it's supposed to be good at, that is striking batters out in two strike counts, that's not fun. I actually, Max Bay has an insanely good app that I've like had so many questions to now Kyle Bland about, like, how do we get this implemented and all this stuff of just the dead zones of fastballs based on arm angle and your sinker, your cutter, your four-seam. It's insane. He is just all three of them are.
He has three of them, though.
He has three of them, but they're all dead zone, which is why I'm talking to Hunter Brown.
Dead zone with good velo, though.
Hunter Brown or Mitch Keller?
No, Mitch Keller. It used to be better velo.
It's 94 and change now. And against right-handers, like, you saw a good ICR this past year with it. I will say, like, sinker, he's doing the right thing with it of trying to jam inside. And he had good results with it. It's just, I just feel like it's Mitch Keller. There's nothing to me that is just saying, hey, cool, I'm going to get you out right now. It's a, please let me put this in the right spot and manipulate everything and don't hit my dead zone pitches. That's my interpretation of Mitch Keller. But I think you make a good point about, like,
with opposite-handed pitchers. He has some issues with opposite-handed hitters with the cutter, the sweeper actually still rates okay to opposite handers, but he never uses it. Or it does. Yeah, actually, he threw 167 sweepers to opposite hand pitch hitters last year. But the best pitch by Stuff Plus, other than that, to opposite-handed hitters is the cutter at 97 and the gyrosider at 100. So he doesn't have a put-away pitch against lefties.
Yeah, nothing had a swing strike rate above 12% last year against lefties. He did have absurdly good put-away rates on the sinker and sweeper against lefties, which, you know, they combined for a total 14% usage, or sorry, 24% usage. But, oh, like Sonny Gray, you should not bank on sinkers continuing their put-away rates, guys. Oh my gosh, that should not... Cold strike threes on sinkers as extreme.
We actually changed something in our model to reflect that. So we have this thing, we put into the model their previous... one of our features in the model is previous fastballs mix.
Okay.
And the reason we do this is... it's complicated, but basically, if like Adam Ottavino asked me about this, if his four seamer rates at well by Stuff Plus, that is knowing how often he throws the four seamer. So it rates well as Stuff Plus. It made the model more predictive, as you can tell, because now it's sort of aware of your fastball mix, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's not saying, oh, Adam Ottavino, you got a 104 Stuff Plus four-seamer. You should throw it more.
Right.
Because what it can do is that you could feed into the model, hey, what would Adam Ottavino look like if he threw the four-seamer 20% of the time? And then you would see the Stuff Plus to like 85 or whatever.
Oh, man, that's really fun. You should have some sort of interactive model for that or like a...
But yeah, we could do that for pitchers, but it's hard. It's a little bit harder for us on the outside to say, oh, this pitcher should throw this pitch more often.
Mm.
It's a little bit more a snapshot of what it's like. And so when you look at Mitch Keller and you say, oh, his fastball 95 Stuff Plus, sinker 94 Stuff Plus, cutter 96 Stuff Plus, what he's actually done is he's optimized his fastball mix.
Yeah.
And he's optimized to a slightly below average. But another thing that happens just in this is sort of bracketology, I guess, is that I have a mix of prospects down there, but also just guys in rotations that are usable. Like he's near Ranger Suarez for me.
Yeah, and I would probably. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a different philosophy again, because you're like, look, you're in a rotation 15 teamer. Very helpful. And throughout
the year. Yeah, like if I can take Mitch Keller, I took Mitch Keller on a draft and hold, and he's like one of my last starting pitchers, right? What I'm hoping to do is he's starting at home. I'm getting that 3.3 or 3.5 ERA at home, and then I pull him out on the road and have somebody on my bench come in. That's mixed in right next to like people I really think are really exciting, like Jose Soriano. So the 70s are like some of my favorite parts of the rankings, and maybe on redoing, I'll push Keller down and just, you know, push someone like Osvaldo Bido up.
Oh yeah, that one.
Transition.
Yeah.
Could that be a transition?
You were selling me a little bit on Bido. You're selling me a little on Bido. That was a good segue. Well, I think he was you said it, he has a really good slider, right? I don't know how much I believe in the fastball yet. And I have a rule that is called the Wascari Noah rule, which is you can't just have a good slider. You have to have something else that we're like, okay, cool. That's also really good. If it's just a slider, that's great. And I haven't been sold yet. The Bido does. Maybe the fastball. He had a really good, it was really good at mitigating hard contact last year. And maybe that does stick around. I just didn't see anything about it that was like, oh yeah, this is why. I'm excited to see more of Bido though. Especially this spring. I think actually he did something interesting in the spring so far that had me a little more intrigued. But just to bring it back really quickly, I would much rather have Ranger Suarez than Mitch Keller, because in your 12-teamer, you'd be like, all right, Ranger Suarez, go out there. You're in a great situation with the Phillies. And hey, half the time you're in rhythm and that's wonderful. And half the time you're not. So if you're out of rhythm, bye-bye. You know, it's kind of that simple really early. With Mitch Keller, it's like you're not going to really know. And if you're telling me that I got to hold on to it and wait for the home starts and then hold through the way, it's like that's not the life I want for you guys in 12-teamers. So that's, I think
still get screwed on stuff like that. Like, you know, with Ranger Suarez last year, if I'm looking through the game log, Like, you know, first half, you're like giggity, you know, it's June 25 and he has like a 2 ERA, and Miami's coming to town. There's no way you're going to sit him for that. Like, you are licking your chops for June 30th against Miami, and he goes 4 2/3 and gives up 6 runs. So then right. His next start, he's at Atlanta. So is he out of rhythm after one start, or was that just a blip in the road?
Yeah. So what I would say is, what's easier with the Ranger Suarez is that you can say, okay, is he nailing those pitches or not?
Well, the start really before he went Detroit, he'd 6 innings, 2 earned, 4.
Right. So you can actually see walks. Is like, is there something you can see? Like, you can see the trend of Ranger Suarez pretty well of just like, cool, I've got, you know, my sinkers are landing arm side. My changeup is right there next
There's to it. There's no number that told you not to pitch Ranger Suarez against Miami.
Oh, no, absolutely. You keep going. No, you keep going. Yeah.
Would you have started him against Atlanta on 7-6? Because then he gave up 5 runs in 5 innings.
So then he gets Oakland.
And you say, oh, now he's out of rhythm,
you know,
and I'm going to sit him.
But, you know, I want to be very clear for a second. Kyle Blaine just sent me an incredible visualization. I got distracted for a moment. So okay. The entire thread you just had slightly interrupted for me. But when it came to last year with Ranger Suarez, it was... we all knew that he wasn't as good as he is. You're still going to go out. You're going to do the Miami one. And then he didn't do as well. There's no world where you don't start him against Miami.
So maybe you're like, okay, the magic's over against Atlanta. You don't start him against Atlanta.
Right.
But I think you still get into trouble because then he's Oakland. And you say, well, if I have him on my roster and he's got Oakland in town and I don't start him, then I might as well drop him. So I'm going to start him. And he goes 6 with 4 earned runs and 6 strikeouts.
And you drop him then.
Really? That's an okay start. I think I'd be like, I really do actually.
I feel strongly about this thing called the Vargas rule, which is the Jason Vargas rule from like 2017 or something, where he like started the season like 2.5 months or whatever of just being like the greatest ace ever. And it's like everyone is, all the fantasy analysts are looking at each other. I'm like, are we the baddies? Are we the ones that are so stupid here? Like, because we know this shouldn't really be a thing, but as a fantasy manager, you're not dropping Jason Vargas.
There's a guy like this every year, yeah.
Right. So there's always Vargas rules going on. But the rule of a Vargas rule is there's a Vargas rule and a Vargas rule plus. A Vargas rule is like 3-4 starts of Paul Blackburn doing well. You're like, all right, fine. And then it stops bad. You're like, okay, go away. Ranger Suarez gets a Vargas rule
plus. What's the definition of stops?
Right, and then it hits a wall at some point, and then it's just no.
But what's that definition? One start, 2 start, 3 start.
No, so one start for like a normal Vargas rule plus is 2.
So the Atlanta start, you would have dropped Suarez. What's crazy though is that if you would have dropped Suarez after the Atlanta start, the Oakland start would have made you feel smart, and then he went on a run of being really useful again. For another 6-7 starts.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I mean, I think that's part of the philosophy of it is I know it sounds crazy, guys. I would rather make a bad drop than a bad hold.
Yeah. And I play deeper leagues and I play dynasty leagues. And in dynasty leagues, you never want to do a drop.
Right.
I think you can nothing you more infuriating. Get away like, I dropped Mark Vientos in a dynasty league, and when he came, you know, when he in a 20 team dynasty league, and when he just became who he was, I was like, God, no, jeez.
I mean, to even hammer this point in a little bit more is like the guy like Suarez is kind of like why I don't want to draft them and why I'm generally lower on them. You're talking about the decision being harder, and I'm like, great, don't want that. I want the tough decisions off my team.
That's why, you know? Like, that's why Mitch Keller is sort of where he is, because I think the decision for me is he starts at home. If he starts being bad at home, then I'll drop him. But it's like it's kind of an easy thing where it's like he starts at home until he proves to me that he's better or worse than that.
Sure,
it's kind of easy. And I I want to defend my Bidot.
Oh, please go ahead.
This is. Because what's the difference? You've got the comp sheet in front of you. I've got something.
Oh, yeah. You have him at 83. I have him at 152.
And Vidal may even pass Keller soon. So because this is why I like him. This is above average stuff plus on sinker and four-seam last year. Zach Wheeler, Tyler Glasnow, Garrett Crochet, Tarek Skubal, Hunter Brown, Tyler Megill, Oswaldo Bidot, Luis Castillo, Brian Wu, George Kirby, Max Fried, Aaron Nola, Bryce Miller, Luis Severino, and Randy Vasquez. And Randy Vasquez is sneaking in because he has 100 stuff plus, and Tyler Miggle's sneaking in. If you make it above average, there's not a stinker on the list. Osvaldo Bidot is the only question mark. If you put the hundreds in, Bidot, McGill, and Vasquez become sort of sleepers. Of course, any sort of sleeper list based on something like this is not going to be 100%. Not all of the pitchers on this list are going to be good this year, but it's a good list, dude. I mean, and it's a good thing to have in today's game, I think, which is two above average fastballs. So I don't think he's the Wascarino you know at all. I think he's two average fastballs, a good slider, a decent cutter, a bad changeup, so maybe some issues against lefties, and also last year, like, pretty legendarily bad command.
It's a man. So I gotta understand fully the love of the sinker and the four seamer for stuff plus, because I mean, the thing that's making me like really really hammer into this is the results on this sinker were just a 20% ICR. That was 100th percentile. Like, I mean, yes, he threw it 105 times, but only four moments of ideal contact for hitters is really low. And the four-seamer was a 30%. Like, these are absurdly good marks. That's 92nd percentile. However, I'm looking at just kind of the overall profiles of these. It's a 95-mile-per-hour sinker. It's average extension. It's not a good attack angle. The PLV is 485, so the locations were terrible. I mean, we're talking like middle sinkers. Yes, but it is really bad 91st first percentile horizontal movement on Bidot's sinker.
So so I would say that this is what keeps things out of the dead zone. Is that his four seam has 16 inches of ride, 16 inches of IVB, and he has a 34-degree arm angle. So that is good ride for a low arm angle. And then his sinker looks like a traditional sinker. That's why his sinker rating is a little bit lower than his four seam rating. It looks like a traditional sinker, except he gets like exceptional.
Oh, wow. Yeah. This is okay. So I got to share this. I call that with everyone on screen here. This is great. This is really, I can't say it enough. Max Bay's app is just so good. And this has highlighted a lot of just how difficult it is to hit these, because all right, let me get this on screen. It really just showcases how, based on, as Eno was saying, the arm angle that I know a lot of people don't have a reference point for, and I'm, of course, doing a terrible job of presenting this, so you just got to give me a second here.
Well, just the idea is that, like, I think the hitter's brain is kind of a... the hitter's brain is a little computer. And one of the hugest inputs that we're finding is arm angle. And so it sees arm angle, and you'll see, like, I was just looking at Bowden Francis's like spray chart of how his movements are. And it actually, it's like his arm angle. Like, it's actually the same thing as his arm angle. You see it and you're like, oh, his curveball goes this way because his arm angle goes this way.
Right.
So anything you could do to mess with that computer. And this isn't like amazing. There are better examples, but this is a pretty good example where the middle of this blue dot here, the light blue, where the, you know, where the, that's where they expect his four seamer to be. Yeah. And instead they get it, you know, three, four inches.
What's even more incredible though is the sinker.
The sinker is different too.
Oh my gosh. This is so far away.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it doesn't have drop. It actually has lift relative.
Yeah, it doesn't drop as much as you'd expect.
But this explains, I mean, these are just really hard fastballs to hit. And that does make a lot more sense to me. I think it's really just like, I could look at maybe the total break of what, oh no, that's not right. That's on the corner. Get out of here. I don't want on the corner. No. There we go. Thank you, Adam. Edit that out. Anyway. The total break of Bidot's fastballs for the sinker is actually 97th percentile at 20.5. And for his four-seamer is 19, which is 86th percentile.
And so the total break is sort of adding horizontal to vertical, sort of getting...
Right. Like, so it's making the hypotenuse. You actually told me that. I was like, what is this extra... What is this Z move? What is it?
I think one of the problems with that can be that sometimes you can have less movement than expected. I wonder if Schwellenbach like has less movement than expected because he's cutting.
I mean, forcing. When I see like the highest number of like you are moving in a way that's more so than others, I'm like, okay, there's probably something good here. And that does make me higher up absolutely Abido. I still wonder about the strike rates of those pitches. Like seeing it's a sub 60% on the sinker. And then also it's not just that, it's when it is a strike, it's down the pipe.
Yeah.
And that makes me a little fearful, but I'm absolutely raising him up in the ranks just because like, hey man, maybe there's some adjustment to be made that you can actually locate better. And now you might have a little bit less movement because of it, but that's still a much better package than I was giving him credit for. So you definitely have influenced me here. That's a wonderful find. All right. We are going to talk about maybe a few more here. We're going to get back into, oh man, I have so many highlighted that are like, I'm higher on than you are. What's wrong with you? We'll talk about those after this break. All right, you know, I've highlighted so many here, and I know I mentioned Yu Darvish. I thought you were like the biggest Yu Darvish guy, but I'm like 20 spots higher than you at 47 versus 66. I don't know if there's really much to say about it. I just feel like he's just a really good pitcher, and like you're not going to drop him, so he's here.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the projections are surprising. Even projections that use Stuff Plus are just surprisingly mediocre, and so, you know, that was a big anchor point for me where I'm starting with that. And so, you know, if you look at my ranks, I have Yu Darvish higher than you would rank him if you just ranked him on a projected ERA.
All right.
You know, he's got a 401 projected ERA, but from Oopsie using Stuff Plus. Mm-hmm. And I have him with Seth Lugo near each other as like, hey, these are guys with large arsenals and maybe it doesn't matter that they have a 96, 97 Stuff Plus. They have good command. I think they could beat their, BP's arsenal metrics. They're elite in terms of like wideness of arsenal and wideness of movement and stuff like, so I did use BP's arsenal metrics to push guys up. Spencer Arrighetti actually scores really well there by their arsenal metrics. And so I moved some guys up. He is one of the highest four ERA guys that I have ranked in order of like the highest guys that I have over a four ERA projection are Ronaldo Lopez, Shane Boz, Seth Lugo, and Yu Darvish. Those are the four guys
Did you see that Seth Lugo was throwing a tick and a half harder?
And another pitch, I
think. And yeah, and a cutter that he was throwing a lot more.
Yeah.
But like, this is something that I've actually been messing around with internally. This is just kind of how I treat it, and maybe I'm wrong about it, but generally we see veterans under their last year velocity at this point. This is the first game of the year. If you're a veteran, you have the spot, you're saving bullets, like you're not matching last year's velocity yet. And
veterans are usually like slow walking it. They're like, spring training, what do I care? I've got it.
Right. Well, they're like getting into it. They're ramping up. Yeah. They're not trying to like gas the gun, especially not Seth Lugo. So when you see 93.6 on his fastball yesterday, like, does that make you go, do you have 94, 95 in there? Like, is that a possibility?
Yeah.
I would be so in on that. Oh my gosh.
It's a walkier for him.
He's a command guy with an elite curveball and obviously the depth of arsenal. And you say it all the time. Once you get to 94, 95 on a fastball, totally changes things much more than like 92, 93.
And he also, you know, as a reliever was sat there often. So, you know, he kind of has it in him. He was he was 94-4 for 101 innings in 2018. So,
Oh my gosh.
But it is hard to know what to do with your rankings in that situation.
I think it's something that first we time see
out.
More.
It's like, what's he going to do with like the three inning outing and the four inning?
I don't think I've seen that though. I don't think I've seen like a veteran throw significantly above their previous year's velocity and then fall back down by the end. Right? Maybe I have. Maybe I'm being dumb about it. I don't know.
I think I have. I mean, Sandy Alcantara touched 99, so he probably sat, you know, 97, and he's not going to sit 97 for the year.
You sure?
Yeah, you might, I guess. But there are other examples.
But, I mean, not to mention also with Sandy, like, he's out there to showcase that he's healthy, right? He's like so excited. The adrenaline, that's the first time back on the mound after, like, you know. But I do track it.
It's a little bit early. It's February 26th. I feel like everything just happens earlier and earlier every year. Mm. But you know, in the next week or so, I'm going to start a query, which is like, you know, this year's spring training fastball velocities versus last year.
Again, oh, that's cool. Yeah.
It's incomplete because you don't have fastball velocities for everybody.
Yeah. Wait, I'll keep calling Alex fast, guys. I'm going to him and Mike Petriello. I will yell.
Well,
at
you know what's funny, like, is that there aren't enough stories. You know, these beat writers do enough stories where they will like actually ask a scout. Mm. And sometimes you can even ask scouts yourself and, like, you know, try to beef it up. I have found, though, that there's not the tightest of correlations between spring training and regular season velocity. I think it's because of this ramping up philosophy and the one inning, three inning, you know, that sort of deal. And it can be a lot of effort for not a lot of return. So.
Oh, right. No, absolutely.
So I kind of just do it. Like, what are the machines? What do they track? Who pops in that? And then I kind of sort through them and try to be like, who do I think can actually keep this velo?
Or you can be like me, you know, who does an article and podcast every single day throughout the spring training, talking about every single starter that matters.
Lose his friggin' mind over Seth Lugo.
I mean, that's cool. That was like one of the ones I was just like, what is this? I mean, Scherzer actually matched his last year velocity in his first start too.
Who are we talking about?
Well, no one yet. I was just having fun. All right. So it seems like you're not in on Walker Buehler at 110. I have him at 64. Yeah. And I just see him as like, all right, it's like a walkie year. Essentially, you have to prove yourself an insurance deal. Uh-huh. And you're going to go all out in this one. Mm-hmm. You're going to get all the opportunities here with the Red Sox. Good situation overall with wins and just, go six innings, whatever you want, Walker Buehler. Also, I think a quick decision in my view, if like we see that he just doesn't have it early on, I'm not going to hold on to this for too long. You have him all the way at 110, though, which seems that there's something more to it that you're not a big fan of.
It's a combination of a few things. I mean, ever since enforcement, we haven't seen a good fastball from him.
Yeah, absolutely right.
And I think last year, every time I turn on a Walker Buehler start, he was, you know, putting the curveball in the dirt. So that's another thing that you actually lose with like tack, is that you lose breaking ball command. And you know, generally what you can do, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you actually pitched, but what you can do with the spider tack is sort of keep the ball really loose in your hand. And like,
oh man, I never used spider tack, so I don't know.
Okay. But you can, I mean, I saw people use it in environment, and they would just like, you could actually just not hold the ball. Like you just,
the ball
would just stick to your finger. So if you think about it, like you can do a lot more like whippy things with breaking balls and stuff and just kind of like sow. And like, you can do crazy, like that's why the spin rate goes up and stuff. And so, I don't know, like what am I hanging my hat on right now? And then the other part of this is that, Boston is the second hardest place to pitch in baseball.
Mm.
And so like Oopsie does a decent job of representing, you know, how I feel, because it's got Stuff Plus in it and it's affecting those things. I can't speak to all the parts of Oopsie the park factors, but the nice thing is that he can take Walker Buehler in Oopsie and put him in Kansas City and spit me out a much different number. Right. Yeah. But Oopsie can do the best job of like, oh, this Stuff Plus in Boston, and it produces a 4.73 ERA. Now you do have Zips with the 3.92, you know, coming up with different numbers there. He had a 4.02 in 2022. That was after enforcement. Walker Buehler's ERA was 4.02 that year. So was that was during enforcement? It was 2022 the year?
Yeah, 2022 is the beginning of it, but that was precursor to Tommy John for him.
Yeah,
also
that too.
So and it's like him trying to figure it out and be like, what's going on? Yeah. I mean, we're on
he's
the same page.
Also, a two Tommy John
ball.
Guy who we have. Yeah. What are the two guys that we have for two Tommy John? We have Nate Eovaldi and Jameson Taillon.
Jacob DeGrom still throwing hard.
No, I'm just saying that's the dot dot dot, dude. I'm saying, what do we have in the rearview mirror that we're like two Tommy Johns and is good, and it's Taillon and Eovaldi.
Yeah,
and both of those guys aren't who they were when they came up. They're not like,
yeah, sure, you know, absolutely
fireballing, you know, like yeah. Nate Evald, he was like 99.
Uncle Ted says Rasmussen, but Rasmussen, not Rasmussen. Oh my gosh.
But we were also, oh, he had two in college, so he's technically around three now.
Oh gosh. I do want to at least.
And you called Reagan's was, that was a 1.5.
1.5. Stop it. We did this last year and everyone didn't want to draft him because of that. Well,
that's true. That's true.
All right.
What do
anyway,
you see? What do you see? You see a good breaking ball and a decent
arsenal.
Well,
I mean, the way I see
now.
It is, yeah, I think there's a solid pitcher in here that, and I'm not saying that he will be. I haven't been ranked at the point saying like, look, if it's not a good package out of the gate, then fine, we move on. Like but the thing is, what you get back though is a very high potential of just like, this is a sturdy win, productive across the board guy. Like he has enough stuff, I think, in that slider, cutter, changeup, curveball. Like he isn't inherently a bad pitcher. You know, there are a lot of these guys that just don't have anything and they can't throw a pitch to get a whiff for their life or don't know how to place it anywhere. Like Buehler has those skills. And it just never quite came together last season. I do feel encouraged by the Red Sox coaching staff and how they've worked with guys who have had declining fastballs and gotten around it. And I just see a case of like, all right, Buehler, what do you got? Like, that's better to me than chasing, you know, something that is destined or like we're hoping for like a 3.8 ERA or something.
I hear you. I struggled with it a little bit. But do you think there's a... It reminds me a little bit of like Brandon Pfaadt regular season, Brandon Pfaadt postseason.
Oh, well, I get that. Of like, and Jordan Montgomery and stuff, like the get into a movement, a moment. And
yeah, yeah. Like back. Walker Buehler during the season last year was one of my least favorite pitchers to watch. Like, I just thought
that
was
so frustrating.
Awful. I thought he had no weapons. I thought
he literally didn't know
he
what
nothing.
He was
he
lost.
Couldn't do anything. Yeah. Anytime he was like, I'll just throw the curveball, he threw it in the dirt. And you're just like, what's the plan?
That is slightly confirmed. But I'm not going to say that's actually true, but like I've gotten, like, I feel like, oh, that was confirmed, but it wasn't confirmed. You understand what I mean? Okay. Mm-hmm. Was that Walker Buehler tried to be the old pitcher that he used to be and was really stubborn to change it. And instead of the Dodgers being like, hey, you're having some trouble. Hey, how about you try this? He goes, oh yeah, that'd be great. No, it's like, hey, you can't do that. He goes, no. So what they do, like, they're like, all right, buddy.
Yeah, and hang yourself by your own petard.
Yeah, right. And then that's what happens. And then the playoffs happen. And he's like, all right, fine. Okay, hold on.
You know, yeah, I was talking about another veteran, and I don't want to name it, so it's obvious or whatever. But I was talking about another veteran and an idea I had for this veteran with his pitching coach. And the talk quickly devolved into like, you know, like, you going to tell him? I mean, it's so, like, this guy's been around for a while. Like, I don't like, it's like, I'll wait. If he wants to talk to me, I'll talk to him and I'll have ideas. But like, right, I'm not like, hey, you know, Mr. has pitched in the big leagues for 15 years. I've got this idea for you right away.
And so
my way or the highway.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. No, with Buehler, I do think there was a bit of that. And I do feel that he actually did embrace some of it by the end of the year a little bit. And then by the playoffs, even though the playoffs, it's kind of like, okay, you're a different pitcher in the playoffs for so many reasons, and I can't really lean into that.
Yeah, he was cold. He had a headwind. It seemed like his spin rates weren't up a lot. They were just up a little. Like, I just feel like he just was feeling the ball better or could get a better grip or something. He somehow things were aligned. I just don't know that, like, he changed his philosophy of pitching that much. I think it just was like the pitches were better.
So
I have a hard time with that one.
To keep this going,
I think we can split this in half. We have more pitchers.
Oh yeah, yeah. We got like, we're going to do like two more because we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Very quick, rapid fire. I'm going to say right now that you have Dustin May at 95. I imagine that changes soon because it seems
he's actually in the Walker Buehler what you're talking about. He's for me is like, does he have a rotation spot? Is he in there? Does it look good?
Right.
Then yay. And then if not. You know,
yeah,
he's out of options.
So, right. You made
so
that
making
point
the team.
I'm just like, well, there's no way that he doesn't make the number five. Then.
I think so, too. And I think they're actually going to do a six, even though they say they're doing five. Mm-hmm. You're not optioning Tony Gonsolin, even though he has an option. So I think both those guys are in.
Now, if we said today, hey, Dustin May is the number five in this rotation, where are you putting him?
I mean, I don't know how much higher because he like how many innings would you give a Dustin May this year?
Right. So this is again a difference of philosophy of hey, you're thinking
I have
more
93 innings for him.
Right. I have him next to
Sean Burke, who I love.
I believe very much in not only the TJ honeymoon, but also the fact
that he's going to go for it.
He also had longer rests off of that Tommy John just because it was the esophagus injury.
Oh my God. That gruesome, weird,
unbelievable. And the story about being like, you were hours away from being critical, you know, insane. But that doesn't mean he got more time to heal than others that usually are in this too. So, and yeah, right. Walkier. Thank you, Nob, in the chat. So,
I mean, every time he goes out and pitches well in the spring, I'll nudge him up a little bit because I've always been a big fan of his stuff. Right. And he's right next to Yuri Perez right now because they're guys that I have 90 innings for and they have 110 stuff plus, and I love them. But
so, you know, again, going back to philosophy, for me, it's a lot more aggressive of where that cliff is, of like where I expect to be dropping guys and turning versus holding on to the year. And I'm very aggressive on it, especially this year because of the shallow pool.
I could move him easily into the 70s. Like he could, like I have Kumar Rocker at 76 with 103 innings.
I think I do too, like the same spot.
and that's 103 innings. And I think I like Dustin May better than Kumar Rocker. So, you know, in terms of if they were both, if you gave me the same amount of innings for both, I think I would take Dustin May's.
Then Tanner Bibee, 31 versus 24 isn't really that big of a thing, but I'm seeing Tanner Bibee more as just like you're very good, consistent. I love the new cutter for him. I just really want to say that. Like, I have him favored above others that are kind of similar mold, but I've come around on Tanner Bibee because I think the cutter is more consistent than the slider has been command-wise. And giving him that extra weapon to get away from the four-seamer, it's also like a slower cutter. It's like mid to high 80s as opposed to like your 90, 91. Giving him that extra thing that he actually commands well makes a big difference to me than the previous version of Bibee.
I think he could lean into the Mets philosophy of having three fastballs. Stuff Plus says the sinker could be okay. And I know it's based on not throwing very much, but it has a very high. So I would risk, you know, throwing 10% sinkers and 10% cutters and 25% fastballs and kind of mixing that up and being more of a guy who has, you know, three okay fastballs and a bunch of really good secondaries.
I mean, I really do want to lean though. This is not as much of like that fastball cutter that we normally talk about. 94.6 on the four seamer and 86.7 on the cutter. And it's not that much harder than the slider at 84.
Interesting.
And in some ways, I remember checking this,
sweeper or something.
Right. How much did this change versus, but there is like 2 to 3 inches of different, of less drop and about 5 inches of horizontal movement different. It is a 99th percentile cutter horizontal movement, to be fair. And then it's 93rd.
And horizontal, according to Tom Tango, horizontal is the most important facet of cutter.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that actually completely. Absolutely. But yeah, if you think of this as like slider sweeper, that's fine with me, honestly. And it's a better version of the older slider.
It's kind of what Shane Bieber did when he was there, is like just develop more breaking balls.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
my fastball's never been good, but now I have three breaking balls.
it's a fantastic pitch. I do see, and this is going to be the last one here as we kind of round this out. I don't want to talk about that guy. Okay. Let's go with, no, I don't want to go with that guy either. What is this? All right. Let's do Taj Bradley, 54. Why do you like Taj Bradley?
He strikes a bunch of people out, dude. He has nasty stuff, and it's bad command. And I know it's all hard. But you know, just coming into the big leagues at 23 years old and striking out 27% of the batters you see and walking 8% of the batters. Sometimes, you know, we of course are supposed to get into the weeds of the pitch mix and all how it all puts together. But like, this is a 240 innings of a 3.75 Sierra with a 27% walk rate, 8% walk, and a 27% strike rate, 8% walk rate. Like, sometimes that's enough for me to be like, he'll figure it out. Like,
it's, yeah, I'm actually finding myself
everything
wanting...
he has done before and be luckier and just be better.
Yeah, I wanted to give you this opportunity too because I find myself leaning more into Taj Bradley because it wasn't giving enough
his
credit
last start in this
for locating his cutter, improving that instead of just kind of throwing it in the zone. He actually started to actually locate it down in a way.
That's what I thought looked better in the spring start, and I thought he actually was emphasizing the cutter and cutter locations. He didn't strike anybody out,
but that's okay.
I think that'll come. I think it was more. Right. I was impressed. I thought the cutter was down and in like in and out, like it was. Not straight down the middle.
I got to a point of saying, do I know if this is going to work or not with Taj Bradley? Is he just going to keep fluctuating? And also moving away from the trap, is that going to affect him at all?
It's not good for him.
So that's kind of where I was at with it. But I can absolutely just see myself seeing more of these spring starts. Be like, yeah, he's got the feel for this, Nick. This is the best version of him we've seen. Let's lean into this. Last guy we're going to end on here. Saying so much of this wonderful guest's time is Max Meyer, a guy that we are two spots different right now.
Why did he bring him up?
Why? Right? What could possibly go on? Let me tell you something right now.
He's on the new pitch tracker. I saw him.
Max Meyer sat 96-97 today. Up 2 to 3 ticks with a flat attack angle at 1.6.
He's on the new pitch tracker. What's on the new pitch tracker?
I think it's sinker. No, not definitely not sinker. But his slider was at 92, you know, not 88.
Dude, I'm moving up right now, dude.
I know, right?
Dude,
I was the one. I'm very much have been like Wasker.
Him or Dean Kramer, dude. I've got him. He just moved up 40 spots in my rankings.
I mean,
wouldn't you rather have Max Meyer than Dean Kramer?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, again, I'm thinking like there's no scenario that I really feel like we're going to be confidently starting Dean Kramer, say for a Vargas rule. Like sometimes he gets into a rhythm with his, it's always like a different pitch that works with him. Sometimes it's a four seam that randomly shows up.
I didn't keep him in a 20 team keeper with 20.
Oh my gosh.
I kept Tyon over him. Like the, it
well,
got
yeah,
down
you should
to like,
Tyon over him.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Wow.
And he didn't go in the first round of the restocking draft.
Because there are some other bad drops, I assume.
God. No, it's one of those leagues where like some teenagers went in the first round. And I took Osvaldo Bido.
Yeah, of course you did. No, I love it. Keep your eye on Max Meyer. And guys, of course, you know, I got you every day. You can read me saying random things about the pitchers from yesterday. And freaking out about it and then saying the next star, like, oh, no, he's back down to 94. Never mind. Just kidding.
I got it.
But you know, thanks for taking the time. I know it's been so busy right now. To come back on the craft is an honor every time. And
here's new pitches max document real quick.
Yeah.
New pitches max document. I know I saw Max Meyer on here.
I think he was talking about...
Max Meyer, sweeper and sinker. I think... That could be okay. He was a four-seam fastball slider guy with a bad changeup. Neither one of those is really going to help him against lefties. But
yeah, well,
if he's throwing the slider 90, then he can throw
92.
That to lefties, I guess.
92, yeah. You know.
He can throw that to lefties.
Yeah, and he can throw 96, 97 with a flat attack angle, too. Like,
yeah.
And I would say the one of the qualities of Max Meyer I've liked is that he generally has good control, like and good command. Like, he's not a...
And he can spin it. I like guys who can spin it. Like I've been trying to get Casey Mize to a regular breaking ball, and he says he can't spin it. So
yeah, I know.
And I think that's actually probably Taj Bradley's problem. Can't spin it.
Okay. Well.
All right.
All right.
We'll have more next week. We have more disagreements to.
Yeah. Well, we'll carry this on. There's like way too much to go. It's more on me. Honestly, it's like I have Justin Steelhire. I have Imanaga and Giolito and Ober, and we were no home runs and stuff. And. Et cetera. You know,
talk about it. There's more.
We'll get
about.
To all of it, but that means you guys got to tune in for next week. You know, what can the people expect from you? Then,
right now, I'm gonna go throw BP. No,
oh my gosh,
today we had a cool collaboration. You, me, Eric Samulski, and right. Lance Brodowski, all with our different stories up. Earlier the week, I had breakout bats. I'm going to have deep league breakout bats and pitchers coming up soon. And it's just like fantasy season for me mostly. I'm doing a piece, though, about modern player development for hitting that's centered around Christian Campbell a little bit, who's just number one with a bullet. The Boston Red Sox hitting prospects are amazing. They're doing great. And I'm also working on something about college technology and pitching programs and how that's affecting how prospects are, how ready prospects are when they come out. So
yeah, that's great.
Just a lot of irons and a lot of fires right now. And I'm just glad that the next couple of days I don't have to pod twice a day. I got to take a break.
Oh my gosh. Well, I am podding every morning on the Plus Pitch podcast to review everything that happened yesterday in spring training.
That's great.
So definitely check it out.
You should also use Nick's tweets for what to watch, especially since, you know, if you have MLB TV, you can just hop around, just watch an inning at this point. I watched the inning. Yesterday I watched like four innings and it was all off your list. I watched Jacob Mazurowski. Nice. I watched Luis Del Ortiz. I watched, you know, it was a lot of the things that you highlighted.
I'm sorry you watched Ortiz. Oh no.
Well,
oh, that was not fun. But we saw Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz today, actually added because Chris Towers mentioned that one. I was like, oh man.
Oh, that's my homework for tonight.
And but yeah, I also have a corresponding article as well. And I'm actually about to test our new live draft assistant tool. That's a web app right after this. So we have that for PL Pro members next week. Super excited about that one. But that is it for today. On behalf of our wonderful guest, Ian Osiris, my name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.